Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a special show, one that I think will speak to a lot of listeners who have a medical history that is complicated. I think the healthcare system is very one size fits all. And I think doctors don't have the time in a lot of instances to think outside the box. But I've noticed two health conditions that nobody seems to really understand, and we're over-treating in some instances. We are treating the symptom, but we're not getting to the root cause. And they're two seem to be different things, but I think there's a connection between both. One is infertility and the other is chronic pain. Both of these, and I'm going to ask our guest, I think inflammation, I think, may be one of the underpinnings of both. And I just don't think that we're spending enough time in correcting the problem. And both of these things can change lives. If you're trying to have a child, if you're living in chronic pain, I think it has a psychological as well as a medical problem that can affect your entire life. So today I want to welcome Ms. Carrie Huebner. She is a physician assistant. She has a wealth of knowledge, personal and professional, on something that none of us really know about. And that's new things to help break the paradigm. And we're going to speak about her practice and also something called low-dose naltrexone. She's attended the University of Florida, where she obtained her Bachelor of Health Science and a Master of Physical Therapy degree. After several years struggling with infertility herself, she and her husband found the help they needed through the Creighton model of NA Pro technology. It inspired her own infertility journey and improved health and wellness using a more natural approach to medicine. She went to PA school at Emory and graduated with highest honors. While there, she was awarded the Georgia Physician Assistant Association Scholarship and was inducted into the Phi Alpha Honor Society. Additionally, she obtained her master's in integrative medicine at George Washington University. She is a certified fertility care practitioner, and she has clinical knowledge. This is somebody who not only understands from a personal standpoint, but works with patients daily. So, Ms. Huebner, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So let's start from the beginning. You have a very interesting course to the style of medicine that you practice now. What brought you into this sphere? I mean, integrative medicine and integrative health is something that's, to me, the best kept secret, but most people don't know about it.
Yes. And I didn't know about it either, really, until we kind of had our own health issues. So, you know, as my bio mentioned, we had several years of infertility, and it was through NAPR technology, which stands for natural procreative technology. So it's more natural approach to infertility. And while we use drugs and even restorative reproductive surgery, the whole point of it is to restore the body, restore the fertility, make the body do what it was designed to do, instead of kind of forcing the body to be pregnant and kind of jumping over what the underlying issue is, like many of the treatments we have today. So it was kind of through that I got interested more in just a natural approach, just from a reproductive aspect. And then my second son, when he was born, had a lot of health issues, and his pediatrician at the time was sort of changing the way he practiced to a more natural, more functional, more integrative approach. At the time, I was very skeptic. I'm kind of a natural skeptic. So it was kind of like, what do you mean diet changes are going to help him with his, you know, sleep and reflux issues? And so didn't really believe it until he was really sick, hospitalized many times. He had significant growth issues, hospitalized because he was so bad, and nobody could give us any answers, you know, not even the head people at some of the head pediatric hospitals in the country. And so really out of desperation, I sort of tried to change things that I could control, health, you know, diet, what we were exposing to, toxins and things like that. And it made such a difference, not only in his health, but really the health of our whole family. And I think sometimes you don't really realize how bad you feel because you've felt so bad and so tired and such a fog for so long until you start feeling more normal again, then you realize how bad you really did feel. Mm-hmm. And it was through that experience that it just became very interesting to me. And I'm always a learner, a lifelong learner. And so I just became interested in on my own and started delving into it. And when we moved here to Atlanta, there's nobody here that practiced NAPR technology at the time. And so there was just such a shortage of providers that both focus on infertility and integrative medicine. So I decided, I had 5 kids actually at the time, all conceived through the help of NAPR technology. So I went back to PA school when my youngest was 5 months old to study, you know, medicine. And of course, you know, going to traditional school medicine is going to teach me a lot of things that I know, but it's not necessarily going to teach me the integrative and more the wholeness side of medicine. And so I decided to get another degree in integrative medicine, because I think there's a place for both conventional and integrative medicine, and to combine the two is kind of what I was looking for.
That's interesting. I think most people who think of integrative side of healthcare have a personal story. And I really love the fact that you said that both can cohabitate. There's this, I think, I don't know if it's we think this way, but there seems to be this feeling that you can't have both, that it's either one mm-hmm. or the other. One is better than the other, and the other should be poo-pooed. I love the fact that you're saying that the whole point of integrative is to use what's good and what works on both sides right. of the thought process. And, you know, I'm not a GYN, but I know the whole fertility pathway, the standard approach, has been a lot about medication and treatments and trying to really control the hormonal aspect of getting pregnant. I'm going to take a step back. Is there more infertility now than there was, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago? I want to answer that question first.
Yes. I mean, I don't have the data on that, I don't think, but I think it would be not out of the realm to say, you know, there's a lot of diseases that are increasing in our chronic disease, and infertility is kind of, you could put that in that class, you know, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases, that I can definitely say, because I wrote my thesis on it. The autoimmune diseases have increased, you know, threefold. And I do think the infertility is definitely increasing for many factors. You know, women are waiting longer. 20 years ago, people were conceiving more in their early 20s. Now it's more, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And then, you know, all the endocrine disruptors we have in our environment, and just a lot of different things that play into infertility. But yes, I do think the incidence of infertility is increasing.
Autoimmune disease, another, we need to add that to our conversation, because I see that just exploding. I don't remember, I'm an ENT, I don't remember this much autoimmune thyroid, hypothyroid, hyperthyroidism than I've ever seen. So this, to me, there has to be something underpinning it. And I wonder, we're going to go to a break soon, but I want to start the conversation. Do you think inflammation is a major underpinning of these problems?
Yes. Heart disease is another one. I think inflammation is a big, big precursor and part of that disease process. But for most diseases, any chronic disease, you know, inflammation, I do think, plays a big part.
But, and we're going to go to break in a few minutes, but I want to go into what the definition of inflammation is. I think people think of it as you hurt yourself, the swells, and it's something that's done to you, right? You have some sort of injury. But it's more subtle than that, isn't it? And I'll let you answer that on the other side of the break when we come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Carrie Huebner. And before the break, I was asking you about inflammation. Everybody thinks of it as an injury that you can see. But is it subtle, more subtle than that?
Yeah. So, I mean, right. You bang your knee on the table and your knee swells, and that's your body doing what it's supposed to do, right? Because inflammation comes in the form of fluid, and that brings you all the white blood cells and the macrophages and the things that are eventually going to kind of heal that. But just like swelling causes pain, you know, there's definitely a downside to inflammation. And what a lot of people don't understand is that there's a lot of low-lying inflammation. So it's not necessarily like your whole body is swelling and you're seeing bruising and things like that. But there's a lot of inflammation that happens, like in the gut, for example, or in your blood vessels, which is why it's, you know, related to heart disease sometimes. But food, for example, can cause inflammation. When we eat such processed food that our body does not even recognize as food, it recognizes as foreign. And so you're constantly triggering your immune system. And your immune system is designed to bring inflammation because that's how it does to fight things off or to try to heal things. But when you're doing that all the time, eventually that's going to cause some chronic damage as well.
Well, actually, I want to reiterate what you said. Inflammation is in itself is not abnormal, right? It's the way the body heals. I mean, if I do a surgery, there has to be a period of inflammation in order to promote healing. It's the fact that it won't stop, right? That it's just kind of on its own track and it's just like a domino. It just keeps falling and going and becomes chronic and takes other things off track. Is that a way that you could see it?
Yes, for sure. And you're right. Like I work sometimes in orthopedics and our post-surgical patients, we actually tell them, do not take any anti-inflammatories for 8 weeks. You actually want the inflammation response. It's your way your body heals. But just like you said, you know, when you have that in a chronic state, when it's under this chronic low inflammatory response, then it causes your gut to become more permeable, causes your vessels to become more thick and less, you know, responsive. And so there's definitely bad things that happen as well.
So if you're on this body is on this kick of not being able to get off this inflammatory train, is it reversible? You just described thickening of vessels and, you know, fluid retention in the tissues. Is it reversible? You know, what do you need to change? That's the second part of the question. To get the process to stop?
So fortunately, I don't think it's you do this one thing and this it fixes everything. So a lot of it takes effort, which I think is sometimes difficult in our society because we have this mindset where we go to the doctor, we want to know what it is, we take a pill and then it's fixed. But I don't think it in true health and healing, I don't think it necessarily works that way. And so a lot of it is just you can do a lot to help yourself just by really working on what you're eating and what you're putting in and what you're putting on in your body. And so those types of things can make a world of difference. You know, sometimes we may need to add a little supplement and things like that. So it's usually very multifactorial. It's very rarely that you can, you know, say, and it usually requires effort, right? It's very hard to change your diet. Although it is very helpful when you can work with somebody who, you know, instead of just saying, you know, you need to lose weight, you need to eat better, you need to eat whole foods and kind of leave it at that. It is helpful sometimes to get, you know, a little bit more direction, but oftentimes just by doing those types of things, you can make a world of difference. And I do think it can be reversible. There's, I think probably some things that are, you know, once you kind of change the way your vessels are shaped or how they work, sometimes that is more permanent, but there is lots of changes and lots of changes in a positive direction that we can make.
I mean, just to again add a little pearl to that, I mean, yes, it could be the vascular changes can be there where it's a little bit stiffer and it's not as much blood flow, but the body can make corollary vessels, right? So it can create new angiogenesis to promote blood flow to an area that didn't have it just based on the body being able, it's very resilient, honestly. And
it is. It really is.
And I can think about that in terms of a female reproductive system. There's a lot of complexity in the female reproductive system. And blood flow, I would think, is also a major player, is it not? If you've got scar tissue and fibroids and all these other things that potentially can inhibit normal function, that would be a reason. That would be something that bringing new oxygen, bringing blood flow, bringing new vessels to the area would actually help, wouldn't it?
Yes. So, you know, inflammation, I think, again, plays a big part even in reproductive health. When you have chronic inflammation, your fallopian tubes don't work as well. Sometimes, you know, they can even be blocked. Now, when we think of block, you think there's something in the tube, but oftentimes it's actually just an inflammatory spasm, or you have cellular inflammatory buildup from all the inflammation cells that build up into the tubes, which it can block flow. And so, you know, or placental health, you know, going back to the angiogenesis and the blood flow, placental health and blood flow and the ended lining of the endometrium is extremely important, especially if somebody who's had, like, say, repetitive miscarriages and things like that.
We talked briefly about diet, but I'd love to get into that a little bit more. I mean, you are what you eat, right? So when people tell you you should eat an anti-inflammatory diet, what does that mean in your opinion?
So common inflammatory foods, so anti-inflammatory would be you want to avoid common inflammatory foods. So those would include things like grain. You know, the grain that even our grandparents ate is vastly different than the grains that we eat. They're very genetically engineered, so they grow faster and grow bigger. And so those grains, even though, you know, you may not have a grain allergy or gluten allergy, often people are very sensitive, which is, it's a hard thing to measure. But our body, again, sees those as sort of foreign because it's such a genetically engineered, your body doesn't even recognize it as food anymore, which causes that, you know, again, that inflammatory response. Dairy oftentimes can be also inflammatory. Any kind of processed foods, because it has all the chemicals and dyes and things like that, can also be inflammatory. So a lot of eating anti-inflammatory is just avoiding those types of foods.
And we talked, I mean, I think we've heard in along the years about endocrine disruptors, but for the listeners who don't know what that is, what does that mean, an endocrine disruptor?
Endocrine disruptors, they tend to be estrogenic, which means that they can cause an estrogen-like response in your body. So plastics are a very big, common one. You know, there's even studies that show because of all the oral contraceptives that, you know, the byproducts come out in urine, not even our water supply. Pesticides tend to be endocrine disruptors, as well. And so all of that can affect your fertility because your reproductive hormone should come from your ovaries, your progesterone and estrogen. So when you have other areas, even endometriosis implants, those can also be endocrine disruptors. So when you have your brain as being stimulated by other chemicals from other sources, it can change how your body works.
It's such a complex system. And we didn't even touch on medication. So I would think that people who are on the cholesterol lowering medications, even thyroid medications, if they're hypothyroid, I mean, that must also come into play. I mean, because I don't think we talk about it enough, but the hormones are fat soluble. I mean, you have to have enough fats or lipids or the essential fats in your system in order to make them. So have you seen, I mean, oil? Have you asked people or done a deep dive on their medications and figured out, hey, this needs to go, or we need to streamline that so that we can get your body working properly again?
Yes. So the big one I deal with, just because I have a lot of reproductive age women with either, you know, fertility issues or anxiety, depression, things like that, are the oral contraceptives. Those definitely, I mean, that your oral contraceptives are basically designed to take a very normal system and make it abnormal. Mm-hmm. You're taking a working system and suppressing it, which can cause a host of all other things. But yeah, statins sometimes too. And I actually have a whole, like a program where you can look at all different kinds of medications and different, you know, nutrient depleting things that it can cause as well.
I know this may not be something that you work with, but I'm curious about the people with the polycystic ovarian syndrome, and they're just completely, I see a few in my office and they're completely out of whack and they're on anti-diabetic medication, all sorts of things. Do you see that? And is that an inflammatory condition as well?
Yeah. So inflammation, definitely. I see a lot of PCOS. Again, it tends to be very multifactorial, but yes, inflammation, it, you know, definitely plays a response into it, especially if they're overweight, and insulin resistant, and you know, that's like you said, the fat soluble, like all those, you know, they tend to be estrogen dominant because it's all stored in their fat cells. And yes, inflammation plays a role in that as well.
It seems that when you get somebody who's totally off bad, out of balance, you've got so many things that you actually have to start bringing back. Again, it's a big question, but where do you start? I mean, is it the psychological side? Is it the, you know, the food? How do you get it rolling?
So I really, my intake, basically my first, you know, when we consult and we talk, I like to get a good history on all things. I ask them about, you know, their mental health history, any trauma, any things, because all of that can affect your physical health, your spiritual health, because I believe, you know, that your, whatever your spiritual beliefs may be, maybe they're not the same as mine, but that's okay. You know, whatever your spiritual beliefs are, those affect your physical health. So, and I think that, you know, if you're a Christian, that your spiritual health, you know, you need to be, I ask about their prayer life and how that's going. And then of course their diet, how much they're sleeping. You know, if you're not eating well and you're just eating whatever, you know, junk, and you're only sleeping 5 hours a night, then no matter what I do, it's not going to help you. So I kind of look at sort of the whole thing. And then I'll usually pick the areas of, you know, where they're depleted the most. But oftentimes I start with a lot of labs, and we look at all their, you know, a lot of their nutrients, vitamins, their adrenal health, their thyroid health. And then I like to do dietary antigen testing. So often we'll start there.
So in terms of the food, what tests do you normally order?
So I use a test, a dietary antigen test through Precision Point, which actually here in Atlanta, but it's the most comprehensive test I've found, because it looks not only at IgG response, but also complement response. So you have different types of immune reactions in the body. So you have the IgE response, which is the allergy response. So that means you know, you eat eggs and you break out in hives. That's a classic allergy. That's an IgE response. But then you have IgG, which are, you know, it's more of a sensitivity. So sort of more of a smoldering fire. So you eat something and it might be a day later, you're feeling, you know, brain fog, you're feeling tired, you're feeling bloated, but it's harder to target because you didn't just eat it. And so it goes through 100 different foods that it looks at, to see if you have this IgG response to that particular food. But it also looks at complement, which is a really important piece of the puzzle, because complement can really amplify IgG response. And so not all tests kind of look at, if you do like the Everly Wells, really popular, that's just looking at IgG. This test that I use looks at several different subtypes of IgG and the complement response as well. So it's a blood test. You go, you get that done, and then it helps us to really see which foods you really have a sensitive to. And I find that my sicker patients will have a lot more, because their gut is just very unhealthy, really inflamed, and it is tending to overreact to everything, because it's just kind of on overdrive. And so I will just sort of design their diet. Usually we do it like a very restrictive diet for the next month or 3 months, avoiding all the foods that they react to. And then, you know, the goal, though, is to, of course, be able to reintroduce some of these foods as their gut kind of heals and their inflammation decreases and their immune response is much more normal. So oftentimes I'll start with the labs, I'll start with the dietary antigen testing, and then sometimes I'll do stool testing as well, which looks at, you know, do you have enough good bugs? Do you have any bad bugs? It looks at inflammatory markers that could be in your stool, things like that.
That's a great place to take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Carrie Huebner, and you can go to her website, SenecaCentre.com, and you can learn about what they do and also make an appointment. So before the break, you were talking a lot about the GI tract. And I think most people don't realize that 70% of the immune system is actually in the gut. So if you have this degree of inflammation and markers that are messing with the body's ability to function, it kind of makes sense that it may also be the epicenter of the cause of things like autoimmune disease, right?
Correct. Yes. I mean, the gut is everything we put into our bodies goes through the gut. Our body has to process it, or, you know, so that is definitely a big part of our health.
Do you recommend things like probiotics?
Yes, although there are some people that really cannot tolerate probiotics, especially people with SIBO. And so we have to be careful. And I don't think all probiotics are necessarily created equal either. So, but in general, yes, I do recommend probiotics. I often recommend prebiotics, which is fiber. That's basically, so probiotics are good, all the good microbes, right? So prebiotics are the food for those good microbes to eat. And so that those two tend to be a common thing that I will recommend.
Something that I've found in terms of the ENT side and the sinuses is mold. That seems to be, and we live in the South, so it seems to be one of those triggers that unless you know what you're looking for or start looking at it, you can totally miss. And it messes with the entire GI system. It's every mucosal lining, at least in the sinuses, is flame on. You can't do anything until you remove them or actually detox them. Are you seeing that at all as part of a trigger?
Yes. So, and that's when we were talking about the gut and sort of being, you know, the root of many problems, I find it's often deeper than the gut, and it's mold was on my front of my brain. So I'm glad you mentioned that. But, you know, I do find there's often some sort of chronic infection underlying all of this, Lyme, mold, or some kind of environmental, you know, heavy metal or something like that, that tends to be, but I do find a lot of mold, which is, can be very complicated, but about 24% of people, when they are exposed to mold, can't get rid of it. And so it makes them very sick. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of mold testing as well.
Do you recommend that they test themselves as well as their home?
Yes. So you got to find the exposure for sure. So, you know, if you're trying to treat the mold, if you don't get them out of the exposure of mold, then it doesn't really help very much. So you have to use a trusted mold remediation or somebody to come test. It's often in soft woods and foods. Actually, a lot of foods have mold, like corn, mm-hmm. things grown in warm, moist environments. Coffee is another big one. I pretty much only drink bulletproof coffee because of that reason. So it's a cleaned, processed coffee so that it's gotten rid of a lot of the mold, but a lot of coffee, Starbucks, things like that have a high mold content.
No, nobody would even think about that in those terms. And, you know, from the standpoint of testing people, your environment, but it's also in you too, right? So once you become mold toxic and you have this inflammatory response, can you use any testing to figure out what's in your tissues and, you know, what strains and how much, like urine testing, stool testing, is there something like that?
Yes. So it's called a mycotoxin test. I like the one from Vibrant Labs is usually the one I like because it's a test you can challenge. So you take glutathione, which is a very potent detoxifier. I have my patients take glutathione for a week prior to doing the mold test, and then they take a hot shower the night before, and then you collect the morning urine, which has the highest content of the mycotoxins. And then it tests for all sorts of different mycotoxins, and that the report is actually really nice because it shows you if you test positive for one, you know, very common sources for those, that particular mycotoxin.
That's really awesome. And I'm sure from a standard healthcare perspective, that's not even thought about. I mean, people would have been put on every single thing to suppress the immune response without getting to the root cause. That's what I really love about your approach, is that you seem to be looking for the cause of the problem, not just treating the symptom. Because I think part of my issue with why everything is just a prescription is that there's no thought behind it. To me, it's like a detective work. So I can imagine who shows up in your office, people who've probably seen multiple practitioners are totally frustrated and they're just at their wit's end. I know what's it like for them when you finally, we have a different way of approaching this. We have a way to get to the root cause and fix that problem. And there's a chance, you know, there's hope for you. How do people respond to that?
Yeah, I think hope is a good word. You kind of see their eyes sort of light up. I find it frequently, because I see a lot of it in the infertility world, because they've been through the gamut. They've been through not a lot of testing. They've been through a lot of either IVF or IUI, and they've spent, you know, thousands, sometimes hundreds, thousands of dollars, and they have no answers. They've usually been told it's unexplained, that they're normal, and they have no answers and no baby. And so to finally talk to somebody who's really interested in getting to the root of the issue, you know, it can be very empowering. And I find even women and couples that I can't help, whether it's through mold or, you know, getting, oftentimes just having that answer mm-hmm. of why I can't get pregnant it can be very healing. And so and that's why I do what I do. Because it's not easy. I mean, it's a lot of what we do in healthcare is protocol driven, right? You mm-hmm. have this symptom, you give them that, you do this test, you're literally following an algorithm, which is kind of boring, to be honest. And so integrative medicine, I think, is it's exciting. It's hard. It's very hard. I'm always constantly learning, and my patients teach me so much, and I've learned so much just through my own health journey. But it is very, very exciting and very fulfilling when you've, you know, helped somebody.
Absolutely. I'd like to switch energy just a bit and talk about chronic pain, because that's another group of patients who, like, I think would think the fertility patients have been through multiple doctors. They've been on every single medication to suppress. And let's be honest, the opioid class of medication doesn't stop pain. It just masks it and just narcotizes you. So you're too sleepy to complain about the pain. So What do you find first of all, how do they find you? Because I think that's a group of patients who have other options. When it comes down to fertility, you know, once you do your IVF, et cetera, you're done. But there's so many different classes of drugs to try, you know, Tramadol and Percocet. I mean, there's a lot of things before they get to the end of their rope. What's the average patient like who finally says, I want to try just something different?
So, I think it takes a patient who has been so frustrated with the system, and they still have a little bit of hope left that there's got to be some other way, some other option rather than just taking narcotics. And they don't like taking narcotics. They usually don't feel good in it. And like you said, it doesn't help. All it does is make you not care for a little bit. But it's not fixing anything. It's just masking the pain. And so, you know, a lot of times they'll just Google, you know, thank gosh for the internet. Sometimes it can be very annoying as providers, right? Because the patient has already gone to Dr. Google and comes in with all these sort of preconceived notions, but sometimes it can be very helpful. And these patients sometimes are very well educated on what they're kind of what they're looking for, what they think the issue is. And so a lot of times they've just done the research on their own, and then they search, you know, they find maybe integrative or functional medicine, and then they search for a functional medicine provider in their area.
And how did you come to low dose naltrexone? It's one of the newest, I don't know if it's new. I don't think it's known very well, but I think it's been around for quite a while. It's a non-opioid approach to pain medication or to pain control. How does it work? How did it come about?
Yes. So I don't know exactly how it came about, but it's definitely been here for a while. I first heard about it at a fertility conference with Dr. Phil Boyle, who's actually in Ireland, who used it a lot in his medical practice, vitamin N, he calls it. And so for fertility. And so that's when I first heard about it. And so I started researching more. And then I actually ended up writing my thesis on it because of all the great benefits of it. And so how it works is, you know, there's high dose naltrexone and there's low dose naltrexone. So I always tell my patients, you Google naltrexone, the first thing that's going to come up is it's used for opioid addicts and alcoholics and things like that. But it has a completely different mechanism when it's used in a high dose, like it is for opioid addicts. In low doses, it has an intermittent, so it's not constant, blockade of the opioid receptors. In high doses, it's constant. And so that's why it's helpful for opioid addicts, because if you use opioids, you'll get sick. It blocks that receptor. In low doses, it blocks it intermittently. And so what happens is it makes your body make its own enkephalins, which is an endorphin. And just like you ever heard of the runner's high, right? You feel so good after you've done this run or this cardio, it's endorphins. Endorphins are very potent, help with pain, and they're very potent anti-inflammatory, and they also help to regulate the immune system. So low dose naltrexone can be helpful for chronic pain because it helps to actually decrease the pain and it helps to decrease inflammation. So you're actually doing something to change the pain rather than just masking it like with opioid medication.
Well, that's a really good way to think about it. And we're going to take a break in a couple of seconds, but I want to start off the conversation with is there a specific patient it would work on? Or there's a lot of chronic, different reasons for chronic pain. Does it work in every instance? So I'll let you think about that and we'll come back after the break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. You can find Ms. Huebner at santacasacenter.com. And before the break, we were talking about naltrexone. And I was wondering, is there a specific kind of pain that it works on? Or is it all chronic pain, no matter from what reason?
Yeah, pretty much all chronic pain, whether it's from endometriosis or whether it's from chronic inflammation with chronic, you know, fatigue and chronic joint pain, I have found it to be effective for. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a magic bullet where, you know, you don't do anything else. You just take this pill and then you're like magically better. You have to pair it with other, like I was talking about before, with dietary changes and things like that. But I do find it helpful across the gamut.
No, I'm looking at, you know, some of the information about it, which is fascinating. You know, that I didn't realize that autoimmune patients and cancer patients have a possible lower level of endorphins. And that's why they're so dysthymic, dysphoric, very low energy. So this is actually a mechanism that goes right to that particular problem, doesn't it?
Yes. So as I say to patients who often have a, you know, chronic pain, anxiety, depression, all kind of go in the same bucket. And so, you know, which is why a lot of chronic pain patients are kind of labeled as either crazy or, you know, you're just depressed, which you probably are depressed, but that's not necessarily just it, right? And so the endorphins are very potent at decreasing all the bad guys of inflammation, the IL-17 and the TNF-alpha and all those bad guys of inflammation that causes damage, which can causes pain. And so it helps not only because it helps to decrease the pain, but it also helps to decrease the damage that inflammation is causing.
So unlike, again, just to reiterate, unlike an opioid who does nothing like that, this is actually getting to the root cause of the problem. So my question, the corollary is, how long will people have to take it? If it helps with reversing inflammation, is this a lifelong thing, or do you get to a point that the person can recover?
Yeah. So the answer is usually, that's a common question my patients will ask. And the answer is usually, I don't know. We'll have to see. Mm. And so sometimes, you know, with dietary changes and other things, they get a lot better and we'll take a little trial off of it and see how they do. I take it. I started having I have a lot of autoimmune in my family, Crohn's, IBD. My mom has severe rheumatoid arthritis. And so I started having cyclical fevers and migratory joint pain and rashes. And of course, all my autoimmune testing was negative, but scared me. This is right after my fifth child. And then right after my first gross anatomy test in PA school, it happened again. And so my mentor I was seeing is the integrative physician that used to see my child in Florida. You know, I decided I wanted to go on it, so he put me on it. And I haven't had an episode since. So I'd been on it for a good 3 or 4 years at this point. So about 6 months ago, I decided to kind of go off of it. And I just put myself back on it because I can tell a huge difference. My sleep is completely disrupted again. I have Hashimoto's, my antibodies are through the roof. So, and if I lived on an island and I lived, were, you know, had no stress and I didn't work two jobs and have five kids and, you know, maybe mm-hmm. I could go off of it. But for me, you know, it didn't work too well. So, there's really no downside. It's a huge safety profile. There's not a lot of side effects. And you can stay on it the rest of your life if you want. And so I do have patients that stay on it for long term. My pregnancy patient, you can take it through pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So it's, there's not any downside really to taking it. But I do sometimes will trial patients off of it and just kind of see how they're doing, if everything else is going really well.
So as an ENT, I'm interested in the Hashimoto's thyroiditis side and it can be maddening when you can't control things like heart rate and, you know, having panic attacks and anxiety associated with it. You said it works for that, the Hashimoto's, or for example, Hashimoto's. Do you see a difference in the markers? Like if you're looking at it on a blood work, would the antibodies, circulating antibodies drop? Is there something that, a way that we can, aside from clinical symptom relief?
Are you asking, is there like symptoms of?
No. Once you start taking the low-dose naltrexone, let's say you have Hashimoto's and you do the mm-hmm. blood work before, you can see that the antibody level is through the roof. Does it change after the symptoms drop after being on it? Can you actually, you know, follow it in terms of the blood work?
Yeah, so you can definitely see. And again, can you attribute it just to the LDN, the low-dose naltrexone? You know, not necessarily, because I've usually instituted a lot of different changes. But yes, you can definitely see the antibodies go down.
Wow, that's fascinating. because the only other way would be a steroid, right? That would be most of the way that people treat inflammation. This is a whole different ballgame where there really isn't, you know, you're not suppressing the immune system like you could with a prednisone. People don't gain weight. I would imagine, like, you know, retain water and all the things that happen when people are on prednisone. That doesn't happen with this, correct?
Correct. There's really no side effects. We looked at all the studies. There's no large randomized controlled studies because the patents run out, right? Follow the money. So nobody wants to do research on it because can't make any money on it. But there are several really good smaller randomized control studies none of them have shown any dangerous side effects. The biggest side effect I find, the most common one, is very vivid dreams. And that's because of those endorphins, right? They're not necessarily bad dreams. It's very vivid. And I titrate up. So I don't start, the full dose is 4.5 milligrams. I start my patients at 1.5 milligrams and then slowly titrate them up over 3 weeks. And sometimes I have patients that are real sensitive. My mold patients particularly tend to be real sensitive to things. So sometimes it may take 5 or 6 weeks to titrate them up, and that's okay. They may have a little bit of disturbed sleep in the beginning, but it actually helps a lot with sleep after those side effects mitigate. And I've seen, you know, decreased anxiety. You definitely don't have the weight issues. There's no weight. If anything, you lose weight just because you feel better and you have more energy. You feel a lot more, you know, the pep's kind of back in your step. And then of course, a lot of the symptoms with autoimmune can be affected as well. Decreased joint pain. One study, it comes to mind out of Penn State when they looked at Crohn's and the histological improvement in the lining of the gut, how much it improved after low-dose naltrexone.
That's amazing. And would it work outside other illnesses such as neuropathy, let's say diabetic neuropathy? That's another very difficult pain management because gabapentin doesn't really do anything. So is that something that you think naltrexone would be something that someone could be helped with?
Yes, I do. There's not really much I don't think it could potentially help with. Again, do we have a specific study on neuropathy? Not necessarily, although there is a fair amount of chronic pain studies in low-dose naltrexone. Low-dose naltrexone, the most it's been studied with is really chronic pain and autoimmune disease. But yes, I do think that's a potential helper there for sure.
So from the standpoint of your practice, I know that there's a telemedicine side to your, it's like a family practice. It has the fertility side. What services are offered?
Pretty much for, I see adult medicine. So my collaborating physician in depending on the state is a internal medicine. So I see patients in Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, and I just added Wisconsin. So I can pretty much see anybody 16 and up. I see a lot of infertility, women's health, hormonal issues, but then I can do general family medicine, urgent care. I do. So pretty much whole, I can see men, you know, women, pretty much anything in that realm I can do.
And people can come, as we just said a second, people can come to the office, but you can also do telemedicine as well. How many services or what are the services, I should say, that you offer through telemedicine?
So I actually only do telemedicine. I don't have an office.
Oh, okay.
So everything
gotcha.
I do is, yeah. So, but, you know, it's amazing. That's one, you know, as bad as COVID was, that's one of the big blessings that came out of COVID is it really has helped to advance telemedicine. And so I can order labs. And even I do take some insurances. I take Blue Cross Blue Shield. I take Cigna. I take TRICARE and Medicare. But I have, you know, pretty reasonable cash-based prices, especially for functional medicine, because some of them can be pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. But you can go, you know, to whichever lab your insurance covers. I can order all that, you know, send you the lab order. You go wherever you are in those states. And then you can, you know, I get the lab results. I can order all the specialty testing. Most of it is home kits. So they send it to your house and you do the urine test or the stool collection at home. And so that can all be done. Any hormone testing. A lot of the fertility stuff is, you know, hormone testing or labs. I work with several different surgeons across the Southeast that I can, you know, refer you to. And so pretty much anything can be done through telemedicine these days.
I think where there's a will, there's a way. And the fact that a lot of this, and it sounds kind of earthy crunchy, but it's listening, isn't it? Having the time to listen to the patient's story and not cut them off and not poo-poo them. Isn't that to me, that's the crux of being a good physician. Do you find that because it is telemedicine and you're spending the time that patients feel free to just let it all hang out.
Yes. And I want them to, right? Because there's so many things that they're, that's part of their story that they may not even be telling me. That's telling me something. Mm-hmm. But just by listening, you can gather so much information, whether it's from, you know, bad things that have happened to them, you know, whatever it is that they're dealing with. And it's really a privilege, right? Like you get to get the most intimate aspects of people's lives that they're sharing with you. It's a huge part of what I do and treating the whole person, whether it's, you know, spiritually, mentally, physically, it all goes into the well-being of the person. And so it really is, it's an honor to be a part of that, to be let into the patient that way.
I absolutely agree. And there's nothing more rewarding than having someone come in. You can see how, you know, the energy is just depleted. They're just disconnected. And by the time they leave, they just feel like they've got a new lease. I think there's nothing that can compare to that as a practitioner.
Yes, it's very, it keeps me going. You know, you get so busy with life and wonder why you're doing what you're doing. And then, you know, get on with the patient and it's, or maybe you've helped somebody that nobody could help before, you know, maybe I get a text with a positive pregnancy test and after so many years. And so it really does keep you going. It is why I do what I do. And giving back in my own health and the providers that have helped me so much. And so I think this is why most providers go into medicine, but it's unfortunately very rare to actually get to do this because we're in most offices, you know, you got 5 minutes, you're so busy, you gotta see as many patients as possible. And so it's not really set up to do this kind of medicine.
Well, I applaud you because it takes courage and it takes the ability to stand your ground and say, this is how I'm going to do it. I don't care what anybody says. So I really appreciate that. Again, how can people reach you and find out and how to access your services?
So if you go to my website, it's Santa Casa Center. That's SANTACASA Center at CENTER.com. My website's up there. The contact information is up there. My office number is 678-506-1205. You can either call or text. And so either way, either one of those is a great way to get information. You can schedule an appointment there as well.
Ms. Huebner, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It was an absolute honor to meet you and speak with you. And I feel like I learned a lot and I'm going to be sending some patients your way, I'm sure. Because I think is about fixing people, fixing the problem. This is what the show's about. Solutions, not just complaining. So thank you for everything you do. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.